Hi, this is Wayne Randazzo of the WCBS Mets Radio Network, and you're listening to Baseball and BBQ.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast, and if you want a lip-smacking, finger-licking good podcast, then you got to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. They have the best guests and the best recipes on all the internet. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ.
The studios of Baseball and Barbecue on Long Island, New York. This is episode number 140. He's Leonard Hollywood Aberman, and I'm Jeff Cohen, and welcome to our show, Leonard.
Hello, Jeff. What a show it is. Episode 140. We've got two great guests. So the first is Paul Francis Sullivan, but wait, Jeff,
you got to call him Sully.
You got to. You have no choice. And of course, our friend Ray Barbecue Buddha Sheehan.
And he has a special 4th of July barbecue recipe. What do you call that, Len?
Oh, it's the queso dip, beer queso. What is it, Jeff?
Well, it's queso beer dip. Yes. But didn't you have a name for it, the rigorous?
Oh, that's right. I did. Yes. Oh, that's so, I'm so terrible. Raise, rip. Wait, let's do it right. Let's do it right. We got to give it the respect that it deserves. It's raise, rip, roaring, righteous, riveting recipe.
Which is a queso beer dip.
Yes. Yeah.
Which we post on our Facebook page and on our Twitter page.
And Ray's going to be opening Roadside Kitchen. And Jeff, let me just tell you that our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports information. Find all of the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's Wimbledon finals, Major League Baseball, the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL futures. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BLEAV. That's BLEAV to get the bonus and get into the action. Bet online, where the game starts.
All right. Len, you want to get to Sully?
Call him Sully.
All right. He is Paul Francis Sullivan, but we like to call him Sully. Our guest on Baseball and BBQ has been up on the podcast airwaves for at least a decade. First with the Sully Baseball Daily podcast, and now with Locked On MLB, where he puts out a podcast on a regular basis at least five times a week. He's a frequent guest on the podcast Baseball PhD, the writer and creator of the Bull Durham Minute, a movie by minute podcast breaking down the 1988 classic movie Bull Durham 1 minute at a time. Not only is he a prolific podcaster, he's a special education teacher, a writer, an Emmy nominated TV producer, and former stand-up comedian. He has strong opinions on baseball, some you will agree with, others you won't. Either way, you'll be entertained. For years, he has done what MLB will not do, is put out an in memoriam video every year. It is done extremely well. Welcome to the podcast, Paul Francis Sullivan, but we like to call him Sully. Welcome, Sully.
Hey, Jeff, are you, man? Hey, Leonard, Jeff, good to see you. And what a wonderful intro. Yeah, that's I've sampled a lot of things from the buffet of life, I guess. And I've just hit 50. One third of my life is over, and let's see what I do for the next two thirds of my life here. Let me put it this way: I acted a little bit. I'm in as a Met fan. You may enjoy. I appeared in a HBO documentary called Curse of the Bambino, which is about which was released in 2003. It was perfectly timed. And there's a I appear in the segment about Game 6 of the 86 World Series, and in my segment, and I've actually been it was a very good documentary. I didn't produce it. I just was a talking head in it. But it wound up winning an Emmy Award and got a bunch of other awards. And Ben Affleck was the narrator. So if you do 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, you can line me up with Ben Affleck. But I've been recognized from that segment because in it, I talk about how when the Red Sox were one pitch away, when they, after Backman and Keith Hernandez popped up, my brother picked up the telephone and we were going to, because this just shows you, we weren't going to celebrate the joy of it. We were going to use it as an opportunity to be jerks, which I think tells you everything you know about Boston fandom. We have an uncle who at the time lived in Oradell, New Jersey, who was a huge Mets fan. And we were going to call him the minute the final, they made the final catch and they run the field and the champagne comes out. His phone was going to ring and it was going to be me and my brother rubbing it in his face. And I tell the story in the documentary that my brother, for every single pitch, was dialing, 201, and then over, thumb over the final number, foul ball, hang up. Hang up. And so my memory of every pitch that Schiraldi and later Bob Stanley threw to Carter and then to pinch hitter Kevin Mitchell and then to Ray Knight and then to Mookie. Until the wild pitch, which is the wild pitch to this day hurts more than the Buckner era because, the game was tied when the Buckner era took place. But up until that, every time the ball left their fingers could have been the moment we've been waiting our whole lives for. And my memory of that happening is the dial tone of the punch button phone of and so I've had people say, were you a Curse of Bambino? Yeah. Were you the yeah, that was me. That was me. But yeah.
That's a great story.
I also, by the way, I'm in the when the Red Sox finally won, they did a follow-up on HBO called Reverse the Curse of Bambino. They got a lot of us back together to talk about the 2004. And I very proudly have the first and last lines of that documentary. So if you want to check that out.
Sure, check that out.
Yeah, but you, as Met fans, I bet you would enjoy. But actually, my segment is in Reverse the Curse as well. So they do feature the Reverse the Curse segments as well. So anyway, but there you go.
We got to see that.
Yeah, that's enough plugging my backstory.
Well, one more plug. Aren't you writing a book on the Pirates?
I'm writing a book. I'm actually pretty deep into a book about the 1972 postseason, including, and in the book, there are five main characters that we're following. Roberto Clemente, Billy Martin, Johnny Bench, Charlie Finley, and Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. And you were following those five people from the beginning of the postseason to essentially the funeral of Jackie Robinson. That all happened within a month. The greatest postseason of all time was 1972, the year I was born.
Right.
And it was all – there was the two league championship series and the World Series all went the distance. The final game either had a walk-off or the winning run was at the plate for the other team. There was, walk-off hits, Burt Campanaris throwing a bat. There was, a decoy, strikeouts, pitchers, Vida Blue throwing four innings out of the bullpen to clinch the pennant. Hall of Famer, Reggie Jackson stealing home and tearing his hamstring. A guy, Gene Tennis of all people, becoming the home run hero, a wild pitch clinched the pennant for Cincinnati. It's just you read about it, and it's that all these things happened, and then Jackie Robinson comes out, gives his final public appearance, and then dies. And we didn't realize it was also Roberto Clemente's final public appearance. I've done piles and piles of research on it, and I'm writing the chapters now. So hopefully, I wish I had it done in time for the 50th anniversary, but you know what? Life and COVID and other stuff got in the way. So, but here we go. I am writing that. Yes. Fascinating. Great. Fascinating time.
Great.
Sully, the last time, it's amazing how time flies, because the last time we had you on, we enjoyed it thoroughly. And we decided that you would be the new commissioner of baseball.
Yes. If you remember. I'm still working on that. I'm still working on that. Yes.
And I got our sound at the time. Well, basically, when we released it, it sounded like.
Oh, yeah. I sounded like Marlon Brando's last transmission from Apocalypse Now.
It was not good. So
it was the last known recording of me.
We had growing.
Well, you were using a CB radio at the time.
Exactly.
I had to say breaker before every point that I had to make.
Exactly. I think it was more like two tin cans and string, but it was close enough. But
well, this is better. This is better.
It is
definitely better. And thankfully, we needed enough time to go by that maybe you forgot about that, because it was a great interview. But only us got to enjoy it, because only we got to enjoy it, because everyone else heard a lot of static. But
well, we're all right.
Glad to have
it's
you.
All right. Jeff is one of my most frequent commenters and asking questions along the way. So I think I owe Jeff a few. I think he pointed a few questions on my. I may have to answer along the way. But anyway, let's get on that.
Yes.
To paraphrase Groucho Marx in Night at the Opera. And now on with the opera.
Yes. reason why we asked you on, because the All-Star Game is scheduled for July 19th. Mm-hmm. And I think it really should be called the half All-Star Game, because it's in the middle of the season. It's the players with half season stats. I know you have suggested the All-Star Game should be played in the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Actually, I would go as far as say play it in during spring training. The players are only going to play one or two innings anyway.
Right. Have it be the beginning of spring training. I think it should be. I've been saying this for years, that the All-Star Game should be how we begin the season. Do you remember how we started the season this year?
Yeah, it was delayed 2 weeks.
But when it stopped being delayed, do you remember how the first game was played and which two teams were playing?
No.
Exactly. And that's, you have a big, long season, and people sometimes it sort of starts with a whimper, and especially when you know that right out of the gate, you're not going to have anyone go nine. I mean, we saw Clayton Kershaw get pulled when he was doing a perfect game, and I had zero problem with that. I know some people have problems with that. Kershaw was coming off of injuries. Remember, he's not a spring chicken, and he missed the playoffs last year. They didn't have Clayton Kershaw in the postseason last year. I'm not going to say the snarky joke, or maybe that helped them, because – you know what? Kershaw has had some lousy postseason, but he's also had some good postseason games. Sure. And he won two games in the World Series. If he put together an argument to be the MVP of the World Series in 2020. But that being said, you start the season with the All-Star Game, I think does two things. First of all, it gives a great kickoff point for the season. Secondly, what you alluded to, Jeff, that was – it's so skewed heavily on the first 2 months of the season, because that's when you're balloting. There's all these instances, like the year where Jake Arrieta was pitching on a different level. He wound up winning the Cy Young Award and shut out the Pirates, basically torpedoed the Pirates season with the wild card game, which he threw, if I'm not mistaken, a complete game shutout, and was really pitching on a completely different level that year. He was not on the All-Star Game, because his first half of the season was good, but wasn't great. Mike Hampton, Met fans remember him. Mike Hampton made the All-Star team as a Rocky.
Yeah.
His time with the Rockies is notorious for being a complete and utter disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a decent first half of one season, and boom. However, Kirk Gibson and Tim Salmon. Tim Salmon is the second best fish name player in the history of the Angels.
Exactly.
Kirk Gibson is a name that even casual baseball fans know, you know, in part because of the home run, but, you know, was an MVP of the National League in 1988. Now, one thing that Tim Salmon, Kirk Gibson, and I have in common is we are all tied with All-Star game selections. Zero. Zero.
Lynn and I are tied with you.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, look, I know that, you know, Kirk Gibson had a lot of injuries. There's not one year he made it as a reserve. Tim Salmon had a phenomenal career. Absolutely phenomenal career. Zero?
Right.
Really? And yet Bobby Bonilla made the All-Star team as a Met. So, I mean, again, Bonilla had a fine career, obviously, in his time with – certainly his time with Pittsburgh was very worthy of his many All-Star game appearances. But not with the Mets.
Nope.
And yet there he was.
Twice
with the Mets. Jose Offerman, who Red Sox fans dubbed Jose Offelman, made the All-Star game as a Red Sox. And it wasn't because it was a mercy pick, because Pedro Martinez and Nomar Garcia-Pyro were on that team, too. So, I mean, so you start the game where you start the season with it, and you use the entire stats from the previous season. In fact, you have some that are automatic berths. If you're the MVP, you're an automatic berth. You're signing top three, we have the top three finalists, right? Top three MVP finalists, top three Cy Young finalists, top three Rookie of the Year finalists. I throw in World Series MVP. Because mm-hmm. the first time we've seen him since the World Series. Okay, is Jorge Soler an all-star? He's now with the freaking Marlins. Fine, but the last time we saw baseball, he was the big hero.
He was.
But another thing you can do by starting it is you keep the conversation alive for baseball in the offseason. You have your all-star votes right through freaking spring training. Or maybe cut it off just as spring, just as pitchers and catchers report. Right. But either way, you can have those debates in November over Christmas time. Who's on the offseason? And you can see the rankings throughout the offseason of who did that, who's ahead, who's not. And inevitably there'll be someone who doesn't deserve to get in because of what I call the Kosuke Fukudomi factor. But even that adds to the fun of it, you mm-hmm. know. So I think there are things you can do at the midpoint. In fact, I have a whole bunch of theories of what you can do, not at the halfway point, but breaking the baseball season into thirds, and have two breaks, one around Memorial Day and one around August 1st. But I digress on that. But I think starting the season with the All-Star game, it's a great start to the year. And let's face it, the All-Star game was created in the mid-30s. As kind of a gimmick.
Yep.
It was part of the, was it a World's Fair or the Fair of the Americas or something? I don't know, but it was in Chicago, and it was this idea to have this exhibition game with the stars of the American League versus the stars of the National League. And it was a massive hit, so they decided to do it every year. In a couple of years, they did two.
That's right.
Yeah, they did two.
And so before we start talking about how sanctimonious the tradition is of the All-Star game, but, you know, the All-Star game had a different purpose back then. Baseball has evolved. It was one of the only times you could see Carl Hubble face Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, Jimmy Fox, and all of them. Well, now even as recently as me being a kid, growing up in the suburbs of Boston, when there was the game of the week, it almost always was the Red Sox game. So the only time I got to see some of the National League stars when I was growing up, whether it was Davey Lopes or Pete Rose or Mike Schmidt or or Dave Kingman or whoever were the big stars in the National League at the time, Steve Carlton, and J.R. Richard was one that made a big impact to me. The All-Star game was one of the only times you got to see them play live and not see them play in clips with Mel Allen and This Week in Baseball. And so there was an allure to that. But now, and again, I'm not saying we need to go backwards. Because I have my smartphone here, I can watch any game I want, except the local game, right. And which is a whole other
rant. Another one, right?
That's a whole other rant.
Yeah,
but you know, I can watch the other day when we're recording this. The other day, the Rockies were playing the Marlins, and if I wanted to watch that, I could just lift my thumb a quarter of an inch and lower it a quarter of an inch, and boom, I'm watching Jazz Chisholm Jr. versus Charlie Blackman. You know, that and so that allure of what the All-Star game meant is different now. And it was, you know, it was a way to kind of break up the season a little bit too. But now the allure could be, hey, we haven't seen these, we haven't seen our friends all off season. Well, here they are. Here's Mike Trout. Here's Mookie Betts. Here's Bryce Harper. Here's Pete Alonso. You know, I had to throw in a Met, otherwise I knew I'd be immediately thrown
thank
off.
You, thank you very much.
But yeah, that's that. I think that would be good, and it would be a sign of the game evolving, because the interest in the game is just eroded intensely. I don't remember who won last year.
Neither do I, but I know it's lost its cachet. I mean, you're talking when I was a kid, I used to love the All-Star game. In fact, I vacationed during the summer when I was a kid. I had no TV. I put on the radio and listened to the All-Star game because it was that exciting. Now it's really just it's nothing. There's nothing for me, and maybe it's because maybe I'm older, maybe because Len's older. But I remember it used to be such a big deal. You know, I went to the All-Star game was in New York in 2013. I took my kid to the Home Run Derby. I thought it was just going to be a boring. I really enjoyed the Home Run Derby, but I really enjoyed the events surrounding the All-Star game, like the Fan Fest at the Jacob Javits Center here in New York. But the game itself, I have no interest.
And I do what my favorite part, and I think you make a great point there. It being a celebration of the game is so much better and so much more important in so many ways than the game itself. My favorite part of the All-Star game, every single, and by the way, I used to get so cynical about the Home Run Derby, and I get cynical about it every year until it starts, and then I love it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of these things that, like, admit it, you love it, don't you? It's stupid. No. You kind of like it, don't you? Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's like the people who try to claim they don't cry at the end of It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah, you do. And then knock it off. But the thing that my favorite part of the All-Star game, in fact, when I go on some of my YouTube baseball rabbit holes, I can't remember if I've ever watched a highlight of an All-Star game. But what I love, and I love it every year, is when they line the players up and they all introduce, they do the little tip of the cap and everything. And it's a wonderful time capsule going back. And he's seeing, you know, oh my God, I forgot that guy was an All-Star. Or, you know, oh my God, I forgot that he played for that team. But I still get thrills. And if it's the local team, like, you know, there's sometimes some interesting things. Like when in 1979, the All-Star game was in Seattle. And Bruce Bochy, was the Mariners' lone All-Star representative. Nice player. I mean, not taking away anyone makes it to the major leagues. Sure. Obviously, a hell of a lot better than I am. Right. But you know, it was a you know, and to be fair, had a very very good year in 1979 for a thoroughly mediocre Seattle Mariners team. And he's there, and he steps out, and he gets this massive standing ovation because he's their guy. You know, it was at the Kingdome, and I love moments like that. You know, like, look at that. When is Bruce Bochy going to be the one getting the standing O? And there it is.
Yeah.
And so, there are moments like that. That was also the All-Star game where Lee Mazzilli got a big home run for the National League. And Dave the Cobra Parker threw out, I believe it was Jim Rice, at home plate. Mm-hmm. That's the first All-Star. I was also 7 years old, and I have what I call in the podcast the rule of seven. That's you start to really make your concrete sports memories when you're around seven. Right. And that was the All-Star game when I was seven. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, naturally, I remember it.
Len?
I want to just move away from the All-Star game for a second. I mean, I was going to ask you, you know, if there's anyone that should get in and won't and whatever, but I don't even care.
Well, so they've expanded the rosters to the point that the only way I'll be able to know the answer to that is at the end of the year. You know, we look at the end of the year, and it turns out that this person was on the All-Star team and this person wound up winning the Cy Young Award or the MVP. Mm-hmm. That's how I answer that question. But they've expanded the rosters, and I have no problem with them expanding the rosters. You know, make it as big, but also tell the manager, you don't have to play everybody. Right. You know, you don't have to play everybody. It would be nice if the Stars were still on the field when the game's on the line. I mean, that to me is a little absurd. And also, there should be a rule that if you're named the starting pitcher of the All-Star game, you have to face everyone. You have to face nine batters. I'm sorry. You have to face all nine starters.
Yeah, that's fine. But you know what, though? As somebody who is a fan of a team that only has the player that, you know, you have to have a player go, you want to see that guy get in the game. As a kid, you're watching and you've got your one representative there. You do want them in the game. Yeah, they don't have to play everyone, but for that kid somewhere, I don't know, the fan of the Pirates or, you know, whoever.
Bruce Bochy. I don't know if Bruce Bochy got in the game or not.
Yeah. You know, but for the kid who's like a Mariner fan, you know, I don't know if they were a Bruce Bochy fan, but they were a Mariner fan. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you is this. You do Locked On Baseball. Now,
Locked On MLB, available wherever you get your podcasts. Okay.
I don't want to digress because I got so much that I could go in a tangent. But
go ahead.
You've got all these, you know, there's Locked On. Every team has Locked On. Mm-hmm. But you are Locked On Baseball.
That's true.
And I have heard you numerous times. Now, I don't tweet like Jeff does. You know,
Few do.
but I listen. Okay. And I am amazed how you have, I don't know how you know every game that's going on, you know, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you spend that much time on every team. It's amazing. It's a compliment to you. How does one
or an indictment? It's either a compliment or an indictment. It's one of the two. Ask me if I paid the gas bill. I don't remember. Look, I don't follow any other sports. I don't. I mean, I casually followed, you know, as I grew up a big Larry Bird fan. So I casually followed the Celtics in the NBA Finals. I wanted them to win. That'd be cool. When it was over, I said, okay, back to work. I just enjoy it. And I think that I like the story of a season. I don't, you know, it gives me, you know, following each team and following each storyline. I'm not one of the people who just follows my team and doesn't follow anyone else. I think most baseball fans, I'm a unicorn as a baseball fan. In that regard, because I think most people follow their team and maybe the rival of their team. Like I'm here, I live in Los Angeles County. Most people here are Dodger fans and they'll also know the Dodgers, but they'll also know the players on the Padres and on San Francisco because they're the closest rivals. Mm-hmm. They probably don't know many people on the Mets. They probably don't know many people on St. Louis or Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I was here last year. They don't know many people on Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up in New England as a kid, but I lived many, many years in New York City. And I know Red Sox fans can tell you everything about the Yankees and vice versa. And, you know, Met fans, whichever team they have a inferiority complex about at the time, they can tell you up and down that, you know, that lineup. But chances are most Met fans can't tell you much about. You know, they probably know that Mike Yastrzemski plays for the Giants, but they probably don't know many other people from the team. I understand that I'm a bit of a unicorn, and I kind of always have been because I've enjoyed the, you know, the whole story of being a baseball fan and what and the, you know, the different players. I think that some people who became fantasy baseball fans, and look, I'm not a big fantasy baseball guy. But one thing that I do like about people who do follow fantasy is it forces them to get out of their comfort. You know, they'll follow, they drafted Jose Abreu or they drafted Jose Ramirez of Cleveland or several anyone else named Jose that they I just realized they threw two Jose's out there. But, you know, it may get them. I hear a lot of times people I know who do fantasy baseball is like, you know, I never would follow the White Sox, but I love Jose Abreu or I love, you know, this player or that. How do I do? I don't know. It's just I enjoy doing it, but I don't watch tons of other television shows. I mean, there's some that I really like, but I don't follow any other sport really. I can't name three people in the NHL right now. I think I can name five people in the NFL. I don't really care. I put $1 million in front of me saying, name one college basketball player. One. Just name them. Nope. Keep your money. Couldn't do it. And I think sometimes it happens when people get older. But you know, I do want to say there is I can use the classic, when you get older, you don't follow that, But there also, it is also a little bit of a reflection on how we consume sports. Because let's go through, you know, when I started having my own television, make my own rules of what I watched, I was a Sports Center addict. ESPN basically dictated what your interests of sports were going to be. And if you wanted to get to those baseball highlights, you had to sit through the NBA. You had to sit through the NFL. Sometimes you had to sit through hockey, not often. You had to sit through college football or Tiger Woods or the Williams sisters or whatever thing that was the headline grabber. And there was a lot of times like, well, you ignore this small market team. You ignore this sport. Well, if now I can't remember the last time I watched ESPN or Sports Center, because that gatekeeper of sports fandom is no longer there. I used to be an addict of, you know, Mike and the Mad Dog and WFAN. And so if I wanted to listen to them, yeah, I got to sit through all this Knicks talk. You know, I got to stick through the Giants draft. Boy, no, nothing is more compelling to me than talk about the NFL draft. Wow. 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 Oh, I hope they trade up to number 13 and grab a safety. Right. But for some NFL fans, that's what they love. But I totally, because of the way the internet is, for better or for worse, you know, I have my Twitter feed, I have, you know, my Instagram feed, and I follow the MLB app, and I can go through the whole thing and not know who's in first place in the NFL, who the big star is of the NFL, or, you know, because it's now totally controlled by us. And if my main team were the Spokane Indians, single A affiliate in Spokane, Washington, that was the team that I worshiped, okay, I could follow that. That would be the front page of my sports section. The idea of how we consume sports, that ESPN era, is done. It's of a different era. You might as well be talking about Edward R. Murrow. And let's make all of my references up to date. But that really was like, how do I do it? Well, all I ever wanted to do was follow baseball. I didn't care about all the other stuff. But if you asked me questions in the 90s or the early 2000s, I probably could have kept up in a conversation about the NFL or through a couple of names of college basketball. I knew who some of the players were in the NBA draft because I watched SportsCenter. You know, Baseball Tonight would be on later, but Baseball Tonight was only on during the season. You know, you know, how do I do it? That's because I've completely modified my sports consumption to what I want, which is just baseball.
Speaking of baseball, obviously,
which I always am.
The state of baseball. I mean, we came into the season, there was a lockout. The season started a couple weeks later. It was supposed to help with competitive balance. And this year, I have not seen it. What's your opinion on the state of baseball, the competitiveness of today's game?
First of all, I have to throw this caveat. I am thrilled they came up with an agreement, even if it was not the best case scenario. It's I'm not going to get political here, but it's like sometimes I've heard people complain about someone not being the best candidate. I said that may be true, but look what the alternative is.
Right.
You know, and was this the best agreement? No, not at all. But it means we have a 162-game season this year and for the next few years.
Right.
And so has the problem been kicked down the road a little bit? Yes. Would I rather kick down the road than have a scorched earth? I remember 94. Believe me, I had to pay attention to hockey and the basketball and the NFL because I had to know baseball on. I could have enjoyed life. I could have I could have read literature. But that was also one of the greatest movie years of all time. Pulp Fiction and Shawshank Redemption. A lot of the great movies came out that year too, and the next for that matter. But I digress. That's a different podcast altogether.
Well, actually, that brings me to a question I have.
Well, just put a pin on the last one. I think the main thing any new agreement has to do is incentivize always putting the best product on the field. To reduce the incentives of the advantage of the 100 loss season. And I think that to be, because we're going to have a bunch of 100 win teams, a bunch of 100 loss teams. And the fact that the Pirates right now, as we're recording this, are a third place team. And they stink. Mm-hmm. And it's because two teams, one team who was a wild card team as recently as September 2021, that being the Reds, and the Cubs, who led the division in June of 2021, are fielding minor league teams now, but not charging minor league prices. Something needs to be done about that. If I could solve that, I would currently be the commissioner of baseball.
Yeah, well, the World Series champions of 2 years ago, last place, 24 games out of first place. They're done.
Yeah. But what were you gonna ask me?
No, I was gonna say, because you were talking about a season without baseball, and I just I'm trying to think of, what do I want to ask the man who talks baseball all the time? If you're not talking baseball, what would you like to talk about? If it's not baseball, what does Sully like to discuss?
There are a lot of things I like to talk about. I do like talking about movies and classic movies, and I think we're in a golden age of television. I think that some of the greatest television of all time is being produced right now. There's too much to watch. And some of the, really, the people who used to want to be the Scorsese's or the Spike Lee's or the Tarantino's of the world now realize that unless they own the rights to Spider-Man, they're not going to get their film in the theater. So they're turning to streaming services and finding new ways to tell stories, not confined by a 2-hour structure or an open-ended TV show. And because of that, you're now seeing unbelievable writing, unbelievable characters, and great actors. And there's too much to it's an embarrassment of riches, and it's an explosion of creativity. You're also seeing an explosion of creativity in comedy. I have no patience for people who say things like, well, comedy is dying because we're being too sensitive. Anyone who says that, please take a polo mallet and smash yourself in the face. Because people were saying that in the 50s and 60s, by the way, that audiences are getting too sensitive. You go back and read articles in the 80s and 90s. Oh, we're getting too sensitive. The things aren't going to be funny. Get out of here. All right. It forces us to be, I don't know, funny, more clever, more creative. And we're seeing, and because a lot of the gatekeepers have been taken away, there's an explosion of stand-up comedy now. There's an explosion of podcasting now. There's an explosion of people who used to try to make 2-hour movies are now making 7 or 8 episode shows where they can really delve into characterization, let the plot unfold in interesting ways. And so I would love to talk about those. And I love to talk about, you know, I'm a bit of a addict of presidential history. I have right nearby me here a book that I'm reading now called Gentleman Boss by Thomas C. Reeves, which is a, how many pages is this? This is a, how many pages? It's a 600-page book about the life of Chester Arthur, who was the president of the United States in the 1880s. And it's fascinating. I love presidential history. And again, I'm not getting political about my personal leanings, but I love to just read about the evolution of the president. And there are a lot of topics that, you know, I can maintain a conversation about something other than baseball. It's just, why would I?
That's a quite a right, but you know, I just wanted to you know, so you are a true Renaissance man.
Yeah,
and it's a good thing.
I try to be, you know, I mean, yeah. I'm a special education teacher, and that's a new thing for me. I'd been a television producer for a long time and a video producer for a long time, and I left, and I work with kids on the autism spectrum, and some of my kids are in wheelchairs, and some of my kids really can't, most of my kids can't talk, and some of them have violent outbursts, and they're a teacher, and trying to, and I can talk about, believe me, I could talk about my kids in my class. I'll change all their names. I'm not supposed to mention their names, but I could talk about the experiences of my kids in class all day long. It's, you know, it's funny. I've only half joked about this, and I also am a father of two, you know, my kids are, you know, they're teenagers living through this weird time to be a teenager. I'm not one of these people who says these millennials are dead. These kids who grew up today are going through stuff. What their reality is such a funhouse mirror and such a weird, distorted version of reality where they're like, you know what? They've grown up with terrorist attacks and, you know, and, you know, pandemics and how many, every 5 years is another economic collapse and, you know, at least two, maybe even three presidential elections where you kind of shrug your shoulders. And I don't know what the hell just happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the idea of, you know what, you're probably not going to have health care. You're probably not going to have a paying job, that that you'll probably never own a house, you know, and, oh, but yeah. And then have the older generation who created that situation, blame them. Well, you shouldn't be drinking that coffee. Well, you should have destroyed health care. You know, so how about, so maybe I need a coffee. I you know, the idea of, well, just get a job. But meanwhile, you can't even get a cashier job anymore. That's all self-service.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so like I'm a firm believer that, you know, there's just, this is a weird world we live in. And I am all for trying to make it a little bit better. And that led to how, what I'm doing with my life right now, which is in the teaching special education, you know, and I know my kids are going to go into a very weird world. And one that looks very different from the world that the two of us entered when we were around their age. Yeah. So I have very little patience. I have little patience for, in my day, shut up about your day. Your day is over. And chances are your day stunk. And let me tell you something about your day. Someone, when you were having your day, was telling you your day stunk. And I'll go bring it back to baseball for a second. One of the most fascinating interviews I ever heard in my life was an interview in 1939 with Lou Gehrig. And this was after he had been diagnosed. And this is after he had given the Luckiest Man on the Face of the Earth speech. He agreed to do an interview with, I believe it was WMCA in New York. It was in 1939. Everyone knew he had the illness. Everyone knew he was dying. And he agreed to do an interview, but he would not talk about his illness. He wanted to talk about baseball. And I could imagine, I'm sure all he was being asked about was his illness. And this was a guy who just had the plug pulled on his career instantly. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of pictures of him in uniform in the 1939 World Series. One of them is shaking the hands of a young Frank Sinatra. So he was on the bench, but he just was not eligible to play, obviously. But in the interview, and it's fascinating to hear his voice, he does have a very thick New York accent. Yeah. And he was asked about the players in baseball, in the state of baseball. And he was talking about how pampered players were now, as opposed to us, right, that we had to really work for it. And now, you know, they don't have to work for it as hard. And who are the players he's talking about? Ted Williams, Hank Greenberg, Joe DiMaggio, Bob Feller. All these are the players that you're like, well, you know, in my day, we had to work for it.
Right.
These kids today, these Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio's, they're handed a lot of stuff. And he said, they're pampered. They're handed a lot of stuff. That's this is what's being said. And so every generation thinks the previous one is pampered and hand. And I'll give you a more recent example. Is I was in the Bay Area when Ricky Henderson was greatest offensive player of his era. I have no compunction saying that. And when he broke the record, he famously said, now I'm the greatest of all time. And all the people wrote about how disrespectful he is to the game and how he's, you know, everything wrong with the game is Ricky Henderson. And I saw an article not too long where they were talking, maybe they were talking about Tim Anderson or something like that. And they said, unlike Ricky Henderson, who always played the game right, never disrespected the game. I said, whoa, I have volumes of people saying that he was everything wrong with the game. Mm-hmm. And so it's always, you know, the fact that Rich Gossage can blather on about how in my day we did this. In your day, you were considered everything wrong. You were a free agent reliever being a multimillionaire. That was looked upon as everything wrong with baseball. You know, so someone is going to look back at what we're going through now as the good old days.
Yes. Yes. A couple more questions before we let you go. Biggest surprise baseball team this year. I'll give you mine. I think it's the New York Yankees, because I had no idea where a pitching staff of Cortez, Montgomery, Holmes, Talion, and Severino, and of course Gerrit Cole was going to be so good. That's the biggest surprise to me.
I would agree. I actually didn't. I thought neither the Red Sox nor Yankees were going to make the postseason because I didn't trust either one of their pitching staffs. And I said that, yes, the Yankees got good pitching last year from some players, but what are you going to get from Cortez? What are you going to get from King? What are you going to get from Clay Holmes? What are you going to get from Montgomery? And apparently a lot.
Yeah.
And remember, going into this year, Gerrit Cole was a question mark. Yes, he was a Cy Young finalist last year, but he finished the season horrifically, and not just the wild card game. And so, yeah, I would have to say the fact that everything has clicked right, at least as of this recording, everything has clicked right with this Yankee team in a way that, and I will say that when I said I didn't pick them to win the postseason, I didn't think they were going to be a 100-loss team. I just said there were too many question marks on this team. And the thing about this year's Yankee team is they turned those question marks into exclamation points.
Yeah.
So I think that in terms of positive surprises, because, you know, everyone knew, you know, Toronto, we knew they were going to be a decent team, and Tampa, Boston. I thought the Twins were going to be a playoff team, and you knew the Astros were going to be a good team. You know, the Mets, the Braves, the Brewers, the Cardinals, Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego. I mean, there's no stunner in any of those groups, whether you thought one would be higher or lower. But I think you're right. The fact that the Yankees are so high up and everything playing so well, at least as of this recording. Look, I called for Cashman and Boone's head. So, you know, if we were going to trash him this offseason, Lord knows I did. You got to give him praise when praise is due.
Yeah, absolutely. And as of this recording, the Cleveland Guardians are in first place.
Mm-hmm.
Which surprised the heck out of us, too.
Well, I think there would be something so poetic if they changed their name and won the World Series.
Yes, right.
Because let me tell you, there's a couple of facts about Cleveland's drought in winning a World Series. Because of all the current franchises, they've had the longest drought. Every team that's had to wait longer is because of their expansion team.
I'll tell you this. The Brooklyn Dodgers have a more recent World Series than the Cleveland Guardians / Indians.
The Syracuse Nationals have won an NBA title more recently than the any team in Cleveland. We've had an NBA title in Syracuse more recently than here. Like, look at only two teams have lost Game 7 of the World Series in extra innings in the wild card era. Both of them were Cleveland Indians teams, 1997 and 2016. You know, I always said that when there was the conflict about the Wahoo logo, and anytime I heard a Cleveland fan supporting the Wahoo logo, I kept reminding him, it's not been a good luck charm. It's not been a good luck charm for you. I think you'd be the first in line to change that. But and here's how secure it was as a non-good luck charm. They didn't win the World Series, obviously, in 95 when they lost to a Braves team whose pitching was unbelievable that year. Okay, and it was their first run at it. Fine. They lost a bunch of years in that run where they had the better team. And then, of course, in 97, they lost to they were called Florida then. And then, of course, they were up 3-1 to the Cubbies and had the World Series winning run at the plate in the bottom of the ninth of Game 7 before the rains came. And then later they had the winning run of the play in the bottom of the 10th. Forget those years. They also did not win the World Series in the major league movies.
Right.
Not even fiction would allow them to win the World Series. They had a voodoo right fielder, left fielder in Serrano. Okay, that's believable. But we can't have them winning the World Series. This isn't science fiction.
Right.
I mean, what is this? The Outer Limits? What's going on here? No, we have to have some semblance of reality. We have Charlie Sheen going from prison to being an all-star closer in that movie. But still, we have to have some semblance of reality here. and the Indians couldn't even win the World Series when it was fiction.
Right. Sully.
By the way, if you're going to talk about biggest surprise, conversely, you know, if the Yankees are the biggest, you know, I hate to say anything positive to the Yankees being a pleasant surprise, but, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. The biggest negative surprise is Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, I picked Seattle to win that. They were 90-something win team last year. They brought in the Cy Young Award winner. They stole a couple of bats from Cincinnati. And the fact of the matter is that they are just, at least as of this recording, flailing with a sub-500 record approaching the midway point of the year, and going to continue a streak where they haven't made the postseason since 2001. I mean, make the postseason in any way, shape, or form. Even in the truncated season, you know, even when it was 60 games and I thought everyone was allowed in, there were more teams who were postseason teams than not in the COVID season. And the Mariners still couldn't make it in the postseason then. And that is just the fact that this team, which has a ton of talent on it, is a losing team is really a travesty.
So, Sully, who right now is a contender that at the end of the season will find out was a pretender? See, I'm getting creative here. And who is who right now do you think is playing bad ball but is going to turn it around?
I would not surprise me if Cleveland runs out of gas. I would like to see them go far, and they have very good pitching. But it would not surprise me if this was a burst of energy and they fall flat. Now, it has helped them that the White Sox have been rotten, and that's allowed the Central to be more open. But it wouldn't surprise me if Cleveland falls flat on its face. It wouldn't surprise me if Boston, and this is coming from a native New Englander, it would not surprise me if Boston falls flat on its face unless they keep getting good contributions from their pitching staff. Teams that are right now kind of on the outside looking in, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Philadelphia made a big run at it. You know, I would like to say the White Sox, but I just don't trust them this year. Yeah, I think a lot of the teams that are currently contending, at the beginning of the year, I picked it to be Toronto versus Los Angeles in the World Series. As of right now, I would pick a Subway Series. And I won't tell you who I think would win. But the thing is if you have a team that can pitch well, and Houston can pitch well, and Tampa can pitch well, and Cleveland can pitch well, you could potentially upset the Yankees in a best of five. But I think it would be really hard to beat them in a best of seven. And so if anyone has any images of upsetting the Yankees dancing in their head, I think it would probably have to be in the division series and not the ALCS. So,
are the Angels coming back?
No.
So another year.
Yeah, they're not good. They're not a good team. Yeah. They have two unbelievable talents, and they're a dysfunctional organization. And also keep in mind, you know, Joe Maddon went from a Hall of Fame manager to an idiot in just, 2 years? I don't think he's an idiot. In fact, I have said the Mariners should hire Joe Maddon. Why not? Mariners got talent, and there's a really good manager who's just available. That Angels team is dysfunctional. Think about how many times they've changed the GM, how many times they've switched. I mean, they've switched managers around, GMs around, strategies around, left and right. I think there's a reason Gerrit Cole didn't sign there. Native of Orange County, having a chance to be the ace in a team with Mike Trout. He took one look at that and said, nah, I'm not going there. Mm-hmm. That place is a mess. And they've had this player who was forged on Mount Olympus and brought down and handed to them. Here is the generational talent. All you have to do is put a mediocre team around him. If wins above replacement is truly the wins you would have above a replacement player, then basically what they should say is wins. And you know what it should be? It should be whamped. Wins above Mike Trout's teammates. Because at that point, I just made that up, but you know what? I'm proud of that. I may use that on my podcast. If you hear it on my podcast, I workshop that here.
Okay.
I used to say
give us credit.
Oh yeah, I used to have a talent which was this reference is dated. I couldn't figure out WAR. I couldn't understand what a replacement player meant, So I called it Warp wins above Rico Petrucelli. I think Rico Petrucelli is not a bad player, was not a good player. He just was a right down the line player. So you go, it wins above Rico Petrucelli, Warp. But now I'm saying, I think it's now whamped wins above Mike Trout's teammates, because he's just surrounded by, he's surrounded by mediocrity. And yeah, he's had a couple of decent teammates here or there. If they put a mediocre team around him, and it's not like the teams that have won the West have all been juggernauts. I mean, the A's have put together a bunch of division winners while Mike Trout's playing in there. And none of those A's teams are making people forget about Reggie Jackson or the Tony La Russa years. Some of them were fine teams. I mean, and I liked those teams. I'm not trying to badmouth them, but it wasn't like there was a juggernaut. And yes, you had the Astros banging their trash cans and everything like that. But you know what? He's been there for over a decade. He's not like this young kid. There's plenty of time to have assembled a team around him, and they just haven't. And it's sad for the reason that, and I've talked about this ad nauseum, we don't have the Mike Trout game. We don't have the Mike Trout moment. Mm-hmm. Even Griffey, who is my favorite non-Red Sox player of all time, never made it to the World Series, but he has a couple of moments in his postseason resume that we can point to. He had the 5 home runs in the series against New York, but especially he has that highlight of running top speed from first base and scored on the Edgar Martinez double to end the 95 division series, which is shown all the time in terms of great moments of recent baseball history. We don't have that for Mike Trout. And it's not his fault. He's been amazing. He hit 5 home runs in one weekend against Seattle just a few weekends before we recorded this. But his team stinks. And they also have the Shohei Ohtani, who is a terrific hitter, terrific pitcher. Wow. All right. So how bad is the rest of that team?
Right. We told you he has strong opinions. Sully, one last thing before you go. Explain your WOB.
WOB, who owns baseball? Who owns baseball actually started as a joke, as a response to war. The year after people said that Trout should have won the MVP over Cabrera because Trout had the higher war. I used to poo-poo war. I don't poo-poo it anymore. I use war the same way I would use Wikipedia. I think it's a good starting off point in trying to figure out someone's value. I don't look at it as the end-all, be-all. And part of the reason is because I don't understand how it's calculated. And I feel weird about calculating a stat where I don't know what the parameters are. His is 2 war higher. How do you know that? Well, because I read it somewhere. In 2013, the season began with Clayton Kershaw throwing a complete game shutout and hitting a home run in the same game. And I said on Twitter, Clayton Kershaw owned baseball today. And I thought, because it was opening day, I thought, well, what if I – actually, that has a nice little ring to it. You own baseball. And so I started to keep track of every player who had the best day, the best National League hitter, best National League pitcher, best American League in both categories. And I did that for the whole year. And I saw there was a flaw that was I was always favoring the players on teams that won that day. So then I created, all right, if you are the best performance by an American League pitcher – hitter and nationally pitcher and hitter on a winning team, you got 1. And if you're the best performance on a losing team, you got 1/2. And I added those up. And at the end of the year, it was a pretty close to the MVPs and the Cy Young vote. Maybe a little bit different here or there, but pretty close. And so that's become, but one thing that also has done, and this goes full circle, what you asked me at the beginning of the show, me keeping track of all these games, me doing Who Owns Baseball means I'm going to check every single box score. And that means I'm going to keep an eye on who's doing well, who's doing not. If I just was doing it as a casual fan, I'd be picking, Rafael Devers did it again. Oh my God. But then you look up and you say, well, wait a minute. And I'm just going to go to, Sully Baseball. WordPress.com, which is where I post these. And we're recording this a few weeks in the past, but like you saw, like some of the top WOB who own baseball for the National League hitters include Pete Alonso, CJ Cron, Paul Goldschmidt, Mookie Betts and Bryce Harper. In the National League would include Mike Trout, Yordan Alvarez, also Ty France, who's got a bunch of half wobs for some losses with the Mariners. National League pitcher, the top two are Sandy Alcantara of Miami and Corbin Burns of Milwaukee. Both of them having great years. Nestor Cortes Jr., Gerrit Cole, and oddly enough, Shohei Ohtani as the American League pitchers. And it's kind of a fun way for me to keep track of who's playing all the games. And sometimes you go up and say, man, Dylan Cease of the White Sox has had a nice year. He's had a bunch of games where he's really dominated. Now, would I normally pay attention to Dylan Cease of the White Sox? Probably not. How do I follow him? There you go.
Did you mention Aaron Judge?
Let's see where Aaron Judge is pretty high up there. Yeah, Judge is right or wrong. You know, like the top one, as of this recording, Yordan Alvarez of Houston, Mike Trout each have 5.5. Ty France of Seattle has 4.5. Ryan Mountcastle and Jose Ramirez have 4. Mountcastle's got a lot of half ones for Oriole losses. And Aaron Judge is at 3.5.
There you go. Hey, Sully. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Where
can people find you?
Well, I know if you want to see things that Jeff comments on, follow me at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. And if you want to listen to the podcast, it's called Locked On MLB. And it's anywhere you get your podcast and catchers. It's for free. And also, if you follow me on those sites, if I do any other things, like I did, I was a guest host on a podcast about the movie Silverado, which is a film I really love from the 80s. And I do things like that. And any other things I do, I usually post on Twitter. And there you go.
All right. Thank you, Sully. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Sully.
And we want to thank Sully for joining us. You can hear him on Locked On MLB 5 times a week on the Locked On Network. Check him out. He's really good. And we were actually on his show last week.
Yes, we were. So check that out. And actually, he's scaling down because there was a time, Jeff, when you discovered him. Yeah. And he was doing a podcast every single day.
365 days a year. And if it was a leap year, he'd do another one.
That's a lot of episodes.
Yes.
We're at 140. He in just a year, he's at 365 or 366.
Exactly. I mean,
that's, wow. He didn't even take off for the holidays, did he?
No, he didn't. If you'd like to reach the show, you give us a call at 516-855-8214. You can email us at baseballandbbq@gmail.com. We have a Facebook page. Comment on a Facebook page, baseballandbbq. We have a Twitter. Tweet us at baseballandbbq. Instagram is baseballandbarbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And please rate and review us. And Len?
Subscribe. And Jeff, we did have somebody reach out to us.
We did.
It was very nice. They commented on our Facebook page. And unless you have it right in front of you, I'll paraphrase it. And it was somebody who said, can't remember the person's name. And I'm sorry if you're listening to this, we appreciate the comment. He basically said that he found the show. He enjoyed listening. And the first episode that he happened to listen to was our interview with John Colson and John Schriedel, who happens to be Wee Willie Schriedel's grandson. And of course, they both wrote a book together about Wee Willie Schriedel, who should be in the St. Louis Cardinals Hall of Fame. The fact that he's not, please, if I got them started on it, they would be more upset than I am. But he said that he enjoyed it so much, he bought the book. So there you go. We did our little Oprah book club there. And enjoyed the book. They're going to listen to more episodes. So, Jeff, you just never know. You never know which episode people are finding us on. I'm just happy that people are finding us. Also, can we also say that our friend Ray Sheehan, who is coming up, is offering our listeners a 15% discount on his products, his rubs.
You can say it.
Oh, I'm saying it.
Oh.
I'm saying it. You can't stop me. I'm saying it. It's rubs. It's sauces. It's his cookbooks. You go to BBQBUDDHA.com, BBQBUDDHA.com. Enter BBQ All-Star 15 at checkout, and you save 15%. And, Jeff, we also want to mention our friends at BaseballBBQ.com for their incredible grilling tools and accessories. You go out there, you're at your grill, and you need a good spatula. You need a good set of tongs. You need a good fork. But you also would love to have one with a baseball bat handle. How cool is that?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Go to their site. And then, Jeff, what about all the authors, a lot of the authors that we have on? Where are they from?
Pandemic Baseball Book Club. Go to pbbclub.com and check out their books, their authors, they're terrific resources.
And so, Jeff, we mentioned Ray Sheehan. We mentioned that. Can I do this again? I really enjoy it. It's fun. So it is. Hold on. Of course, now I cannot find. Here we go. Because I had to write it down. I can't memorize this. Ray's rip roaring, righteous, riveting recipe. I got to think of a few more R words and make it a lot longer. Here he is, Ray Sheehan. Baseball and barbecue listeners, you're about to hear from someone that I think you might know. He is a friend of the show. We could even call him a guest co-host. You could call him Ray. You could call him Jay. You could call him Ray J.
But if you call him Ray, you call him by his real name.
Exactly. So we have with us none other than the number one barbecue Buddha, and that is Ray Sheehan, who you know him from the company Barbecue Buddha. You know him from his cookbooks, and soon you're going to know him from his restaurant. We know him. We love him. We're so happy that he's back with us. He's coming on. We'll tell you about this special segment with Ray Sheehan. But Ray, welcome back to Baseball and Barbecue.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure, and the feeling is mutual.
Awesome. Yes. So, Ray, the segment we're going to have with you, and we don't have any theme music, but it's going to be called Ray's Rip Roaring Righteous Riveting Recipe. That's what
we
call it. But before we get to the recipe, I just want to ask you a couple of quick questions. All right.
Sure.
Tell us what's going on with Barbecue Buddha. Is there a new promotion?
There is a new promotion. To celebrate, you know, summer and baseball and BBQ and leading into the All-Star game, we are doing 15% off. You're going to enter code BBQAllStar15 at checkout on BBQBuddha.com to save 15% on your order. And that's thanks to the Baseball and BBQ podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's 15% it really adds up. I mean, you've got your cookbooks on there, your sauces, your rubs. How's the hot sauce? You know, I'm not a hot sauce fan.
So this sauce is for you. This hot sauce is very robust. It's
okay.
A cayenne red pepper sauce. It's not going to ruin your day. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of good flavor. There's notes of garlic and spice. And of course, you know, the pepper, but it's more of a complimentary sauce.
Okay.
We call it mantra hot sauce because our mantra is to put flavor into your every meal. It's more of an everyday hot sauce. Good.
Yeah. Cause I'm not, like I said, when it's just people putting hot sauce on because they just want it to be hot, but if it's adding flavor, that's perfect. Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, absolutely. If it adds flavor, and nothing wrong with that, right?
Right. You're going to get a little bit of heat and a lot of flavor.
All right. Len, what's the name of this segment?
Oh, it's Ray's rip, roaring, righteous, riveting recipe.
All right. Well, this episode's dropping on July 2nd, right in time for the July 4th weekend. And as Ray said, is the All-Star Game's coming up. This is a great recipe, very quick, very easy. And Ray, I'm going to let you tell us everybody how to make it. I just want to let everybody know it comes from your book, Big Green Egg Basics from a Master Barbecuer from Page Street Publishing. And I will be posting this on our Facebook page. So, you know, you don't have to remember everything and write it down. We'll have it on our Facebook page, Baseball and BBQ. So, Ray, please, how do we make this? What are we making?
So we're making a smoked queso and beer dip. So this kind of hits all those notes. You know, you're going to use some beer. You can change it up. If you want to use ground sausage, that's what's in the recipe. But if you don't like sausage, you can definitely use ground beef. You can use hot, sweet, or breakfast sausage, something without the casing. And then you're going to use a variety of cheeses. This is so simple. You can set it up the night before, and then, you know, you're going to put all your ingredients in it, like one of those aluminum half pans. And then the next day when you fire up your smoker or your grill, you can just put it on there and let it all meld together over the smoke. But you're going to have things like, you know, I like in this recipe, I have Monterey Jack, shredded chard, Velveeta, onions, green bell peppers, jalapeno peppers, diced tomatoes. I like to use diced green chilies, a bunch of different spices, garlic. Use your favorite beer. I like to use whatever you like to drink. That's what I recommend to use in here. And that you would put in right before you put it on the grill. If for some reason you don't have a grill, you can do this in the oven, same time and temperature. Like if you live in an apartment, you don't have a grill. If you have a smoker, even better, you could throw a wood chunk in there and, you know, that's going to help season up the queso dip. So on the grill, in the smoker, in the oven, really whatever is easier for you. I like to serve it with tortilla chips, but you can certainly serve it with vegetables if you want. But you really want to make it your own. You know, the spices and seasonings, you know, it's like, I think every time I make it, I try to do something a little bit different. And we've been tweaking this recipe for quite a while, trying different cheeses and spices and different beers with jalapenos, without. But it's super easy and it feeds a crowd. So it's really great for, you know, any game or if you're having a bunch of people over.
And Ray, putting it in the tin is a great idea because when you go to these, let's say you're bringing it, you're invited for a 4th of July outing and you go to it, you don't want to have to worry about bringing back the Corningware or the
right
whatever pot you're putting in it, with the tin, you could just leave it. You don't need to worry about it.
The only thing I would suggest, if you are going to put it in a tin, I mean, you can certainly put this in a cast iron pan. Excuse me. If you're just making this at home, you can cast iron pan it. If you're going to take it somewhere, absolutely put it in a half pan and put it in a like a cookie sheet. So for stability, because it's going to be hot and you want to make sure that it's easier to take in and out of the grill.
How long are we supposed to put it in on the grill and for what temperature?
So I have the temperature on here about 300 and I like to let it go for about 25 to 30 minutes. It's really until everything starts to melt and, you know, you're going to stir it up a few times throughout the cook just to make sure it is melting properly and it's all mixed to an even texture.
Yeah, serve it with the mini carrots or you know, it's good for with that. It's like if you cut up some broccoli or cauliflower because they have the ridges, you know.
Yep. and it soaks up the queso.
Yeah, they really get it. And then you could say
it's trying to make it healthy. Come on, use the tortilla chips.
But you can also use, if you have access to like those big Bavarian pretzels, goes with the beer, you know, something like that where you can kind of soak it up and it's a little bit more substantial. But like I said, I mean, you can try it with sausage. You can try it with beef. Sometimes I'll mix the two, you know, I'll do like a andouille and, you know, a couple different sausages, or you can even do, I've done one with like andouille and shrimp and, you know, give it more of like a Louisiana flair. And so for the spice for that, I would use more of a Cajun rub. sprinkled in there.
I have a hard hitting question here for the beer: imported, domestic, light beer, stout, IPA. What are you thinking?
He said your favorite beer.
Yeah, I'm thinking your favorite. Like, you know, if it's something you like to drink, then I would use that. That's probably the easiest way to do it, because there's so many different varieties. You know, for this one, I mean, in the book, I used Pabst Blue Ribbon. That's what I had on hand. But you could certainly use something with a lot more oomph in there to give it more of a pronounced beer flavor.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, Pitmaster / Chef Ray. I'm thinking, here's an idea. What about you get one of those, if you want to get a little fancy, you get one of those big breads, you know, that you make into a bread bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Scoop out the center and put that aside, because you'll end up using those chunks of bread for dipping.
Right.
But bring that, because I don't, if you're transporting it, if you're having it at your place or whatever, no issue. Pour that into the bread bowl. And then as you're eating it, it's soaking in the bread, and people are taking chunks of the bread that's now covered with the cheese sauce, and maybe it's got meat. And what do you think? Should I write a cookbook?
I think you're on to something. And the best thing about this recipe really is there is a recipe, but it's more of a blueprint. You can certainly make this your own. Use whatever you have on hand. You can clean out the fridge, or you can plan specific ingredients, but it really is something that you can use it as a blueprint and make it your own.
Again, it's from the book, Big Green Egg Basics from a Master Barbecuer from Page Street Publishing. And don't have to make it on a big green egg in the oven, on your favorite smoker, on your grill. Works just as well.
So, Ray, how many recipes in that book?
About 60.
So we need to have Ray on 60 more times each time he does a recipe.
the book is set up, the way it's set up is each chapter is a different technique. So hot and fast searing and grilling, low and slow smoking, roasting, baking savory, baking sweet. And you can do all these things on your big green egg with ease.
And other grills too.
And other Jeff, girls, yes.
What episode did we have? If people are new to the show or they missed Ray talking about the book, what episode did we have Ray on where he was actually talking about the book? Who I put you on the spot, didn't I?
You did. I'm going to have to go back here. And
you check that. You okay. Check that. And while you are, let me just tell everybody that this is called Ray's Rip Roaring Righteous Riveting Recipe. And Ray, while Jeff is looking that up, you've got a project that's going to be opening soon. Ray's Roadside Kitchen. There you go. There's the a lot of R's, and they work well, don't they? Tell us how close are you to opening?
We're shooting for mid-August right now. Things are moving right along. Our counters are done. The interior's just about done getting painted. Some of the displays are in. We're waiting on some equipment. So it's moving right along. Pretty soon we'll get into the phase where like our branding and logo is done actually right now. So we're going to be working on the website, and we're going to start hiring probably in the next few weeks. And yeah, then we can start training and getting everybody rolling.
Nice. So that is, Jeff looked it up, episode 128 for Ray's book. Okay, so if you want to get an in-depth listen on his book, but no need, just get the book. It's a phenomenal book, and now you can just go to his website and get the book, get some sauce, whatever. I happen to see on Facebook the pictures that were posted of the cafe, of the kitchen, the Ray's Roadside Kitchen. It looked very nice. You got a lot of likes on it. You know, Facebook is so funny with those likes, because I think you got the likes, yes, but it's so funny. You can put someone's name so that they will then see it, right?
Right.
But then you get people that are giving like a like to the name that you're putting. It's like, what did people just...
Len, all these likes are from you, though.
I like it a lot. I gave it a heart. You know, I love it.
if half the people show up and actually come to the restaurant, I'll be thrilled because, you know, we've gotten a lot of, like you said, likes. But my goal really is to come up with dishes that are going to get people out of their seat and say, I can only get that at Ray's and I have to go there to get it today or tomorrow, whatever it is, to create food that's that good. I'm that passionate about it. I want to create food that people are like, oh my God, I have to go get that.
And where is this? And where's the location?
The location is 465 Pinehurst Road, which is Route 539 in Cream Ridge, New Jersey.
Isn't it near something like...
It's near a lot of things. It's like 10 minutes from Great Adventure.
Right. That's what I thought.
Okay. It's Cream Ridge. There's a Cream Ridge Winery is not far from us.
Okay.
And it's a main thoroughfare that would head from, you know, upstate New York, coming all the way down to the shore. So it's a very highly traveled road. We're really hoping to get people, you know, on their way to the shore or, you know, on the way home, picking up dinner. We really are looking forward to not only, I mean, we're not focusing necessarily on tourists. We really want to focus on our community, but right. The people on their way to somewhere, the tourist, I guess you would call them, that's kind of like a bonus, you know?
Well, we're going to take a ride and it's not around the corner for us, but we're coming.
Well, I can't wait.
Looking at Google Maps, it looks like it's halfway between New York City and Philadelphia. So if you're going down to Atlantic City, stop by Ray's Roadside Kitchen, get a good meal.
Yeah, right. It's not far from Atlantic City, about an hour 15, maybe.
Yeah. Go there before you lose all your money.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because we don't take, there's no credit. I mean, we're going to take cards, but you know.
Like, no IOUs.
No IOUs. No, you can't pay me Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Right.
Like and Wimpy.
Go on the way to Olympia, not on the way back. Right.
And he's not taking the chip. He's not taking a poker chip or whatever. No. He's not going to accept that.
No. You know, we're going to have, as far as the menu goes, we're going to have some really great fried chicken, burgers that we grind fresh every day, big salads. It's kind of like something for everybody, you know, and guess what? There's going to be some really great barbecue specials. Like we're going to have a plate of the day and the plate of the day could really be anything. And I think that, you know, you're not going to get a food jag like, oh, there's nothing different. You know, there's going to be a plate different every day.
Did you say big salad?
That's yes.
Is that a Seinfeld reference? The big salad.
I am a big Seinfeld fan, and I love a big salad. And I've been on a somewhat of a health kick to the extent of trying to just basically watch my carb intake. So I love a big salad with a protein on top, and I think there's a lot of people that would like that. So why not have a big salad or, you know, say five or six different big salads that people could get some sort of a protein on with or without. So, but yes, it is a Seinfeld reference. So you got that.
Yeah. I love that.
The big salad.
And George will be paying for that big salad.
Yes.
Right. Yep.
It sounds incredible. The fried chicken sounds incredible. I know you said you're going to have the hot dogs.
So I'm working on the hot dog, on the baseball and barbecue hot dog. You know, that's your namesake, right? So we want to do something that you guys are really going to like. And I want to make sure that you both like it. So I don't know, are we going to go hot dog with, you know, a homemade chili and cheese? Or do we do the barbecue beans? That gives it the barbecue and the baseball is the hot dog. Maybe we top it off with a little cheddar cheese and some Fritos to give it a little crunch, some kind of corn chips.
Wow, this is
right.
Getting hungry. You know what? You should sell that at Citi Field or Yankee Stadium or Citizens Bank Park.
Yeah,
that sounds really good. Yeah.
$25 hot dogs.
Yeah, why not?
Wow, that sounds absolutely incredible, Ray. We are excited. We promised you at one point, we didn't say when, but we would help you achieve world domination. You are on your way. Sauces, rubs with Barbecue Buddha, cookbooks, the restaurant, and you're even going to be speaking. Let's end with this. Talk about how you're going to be a guest speaker at a certain event that's coming up for the NBBQA.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited. I was asked to be a speaker at the National Barbecue and Grilling Association's first mini conference. That's going to be at Big Dan's Barbecue in August. You can get your tickets at right on the website on NBBQA. What I'm going to be talking about is basically how the making of a barbecue cookbook and how we do. What's the process to it? How did it come about? We're going to talk about the food photography, the pros and cons of using real barbecue and real food, because that's what we did. Every dish that was photographed for the book, we made in, one right after the other over the course of about 7 or 8 days. And, we're just going to there's so many people that I think really want to write a barbecue book or a cookbook in general. So I have some tips and some strategies that I can share. And actually another podcast that I think is really great that talks specifically about writing cookbooks. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to seeing our barbecue family in person, which is something we haven't been able to do for a while. So I think it's going to be a great time.
And Ray, also Barbecue Buddha, you can get it's BBQBUDDHA.com. You can buy online, but also your sauces are available in some local stores as well.
Yeah, we're in about, I think it's like 70 something stores throughout New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware. That, there's a map locator on our website. So if you go on to BBQBUDDHA.com and click on the locate button and then enter your zip code, it'll show you this. Stores will populate of where you can get our products.
And if you're going to order right from the website, don't forget to put in the code BBQAllStar15 at checkout to receive 15% off your order through July 16th only.
Right? That's in care of the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast. And that is through the significance of that day is that's the All-Star game. That's why it's BBQ All-Star, because you guys are BBQ baseball and BBQ All-Stars. So the discount runs through that day up until midnight on the All-Star game. So if you're up late watching the game, you could place your order and save 15%.
Ray, thank you so much. That's very generous of you. We appreciate you coming on. Thank you for sharing your recipe. It will be on our Facebook page. I'll tweet it out as well. So please, any occasion. This great recipe for a smoked queso beer dip. Please check it out. Ray, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Thank you. I'm blessed to have you guys as friends, and thank you for having me on. Really.
Thank you. The check's in the mail. Thanks. And Len, I think I'm going to make that queso beer dip.
I hope so, because Jeff, I'm going to eat some of that queso beer dip when you make that queso beer dip.
Oh, yeah? You coming over?
I think so.
Okay. All right. I'll make it for you.
Thank you very much.
All right. By the way, we want to thank Ron Miller, who is the person who wrote into our Facebook page.
Okay. There you go. See? Thank you for, you found it.
Yes.
Okay. Jeff, we are brought to you and everyone else by Bet Online, where the game starts. Jeff, episode 140, every time we get to a 5 or a 10, is it a big deal to be at 140?
You know what's a big deal? Number 141 is going to be a big deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't tell me. I'm going to be surprised.
Okay.
Oh, were you going to tell me?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. You're going to surprise me.
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. So take us home, Len.
All right. You know what? Let's end the show the way we love to do it. With the poet, Shel Kurkovsky, the musician, Dave Dresser, and the song, Baseball Always Brings You Home. Jeff, I'm looking forward to the surprise of episode 141.
Yeah, and happy 4th of July, everybody. Enjoy.